Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check. Today is Tuesday, the 23rd of February, 2010, and I'm your host, Tony Pittman. This is episode 29 of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. Reality Check is a show designed to give you a healthy dose of reality. And we do that by promoting the art of critical thinking and skeptical analysis. Each week we bring you a roundup of LGBT news, followed by an in-depth analysis of an issue related to the paranormal or the pseudoscientific. And finally, we wrap up each show with a movie review. On today's show, after our LGBT news roundup, we're going to return one last time to the alternative medicine known as homeopathy. And tonight, we're going to have a look at the unethical behaviour of Australia's largest manufacturer of homeopathic remedies, the Brouwer Corporation. And we'll also use some statements by Brouwer to learn a little bit about those errors in thinking known as logical fallacies. Then in our movie review, we'll have a look at the film for which Colin Firth won the Best Actor Award at the BAFTAs in London on Sunday night, A Single Man. So for all that and more, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9. Now, just before we get into our LGBT news roundup, I wanted to let you know that Reality Check will be changing time slot starting from next week. So this will be our last show at 10 o'clock on Tuesdays, and come March 1st, we'll be moving to the 8 p.m. Monday slot. So if you're a regular listener to Reality Check, I hope you can tune in then. Otherwise, if you can't listen on Monday nights because it clashes with your capoeira classes or whatever, you can always keep listening by subscribing to the podcast through our website, realitycheckonline.net. Okay, now on with the show. So let's have a look at the LGBT news for the last week or so. And all our news tonight involves developments in cases that we've been following for several weeks now here on Reality Check. First up, let's head to Malawi, where two men, Stephen Monjeza and Tiwonge Chimbalanga, were arrested in late December for participating in a traditional engagement ceremony. The two men have been in jail since then and have had a number of court appearances in Blantyre, Malawi's largest city. The prosecution has now apparently rested its case, and the magistrates will hand down their verdict on March 22nd. While the case was underway, the two men's lawyer also applied to Malawi's Constitutional Court, asking it to review the constitutionality of the laws under which they were charged. But unfortunately, that application was rejected yesterday. So things are not looking good for Stephen and Tiwonge, and in fact not looking good for LGBT people in general in Malawi, because in the last few weeks, police there have been conducting what they call a sweep operation to hunt down and arrest other LGBT people. In early February, they arrested a gay activist, Peter Sawali, for putting up posters in Blantyre that said, "Gay rights are human rights." he was convicted of conduct likely to cause a breach of the peace and sentenced to 2 months cleaning duty at the Blantyre Magistrates Court. Then last week they also arrested a 60-year-old man and charged him with sodomy. So a very frustrating and bleak situation there for LGBT people in Malawi at the moment. And one, unfortunately, I suspect that is not going to change for a long, long time. But of course, whatever happens, we will keep you posted of all developments here on Reality Check. And speaking of bleak situations for LGBT people, let's stay in Africa for our second news item, but move slightly north to Kenya, where we reported last week that 6 men were being detained by police in the coastal town of Mtwapa for the alleged crime of homosexuality, after having been beaten by a homophobic mob, some to the point of unconsciousness. The mob had been driven into a frenzy by completely false rumours that a same-sex wedding was due to take place in the town. Well, I'm pleased to report today that all 6 men were released by the police last week, with a police spokesperson saying that there was no evidence on which to prosecute them. The police also apparently advised the men to leave the area for their own safety. So, partially good news there from Kenya. Well, good news in that the arrested men are not going to be prosecuted, but of course bad news in that the media coverage that this case attracted seems to have stirred a lot of nasty homophobic feeling throughout the country, and a real fear of further vigilante attacks against gay men. Apparently, apart from the 6 men arrested by police, 2 other men in nearby Mombasa were also randomly attacked by mobs in the following days, simply because they were perceived as being gay. So let's just hope that everyone now takes a deep breath, counts to 10, and gets back to their normal lives and stops scapegoating LGBT people and imagining that their very existence is somehow a threat to others. I doubt that will happen, but we can always hope. Okay, let's move now to our final news item for today, and it comes from the United States, where the debate continues about the repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on LGBT people in the military. And happily, it's turning out to be not such a hot debate or a political hot potato after all. There seems to be a fairly broad consensus that Don't Ask, Don't Tell should be repealed. Not only have Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mike Mullen and Defence Secretary Robert Gates announced their support for the repeal, but so has former Secretary of State Colin Powell and even former Vice President Dick Cheney. And just yesterday, the top US general in Iraq, Raymond Odierno, also announced that he supports repeal. Opinion polls show that a majority of US citizens also favour abolishing the ban, somewhere between 60% and 75%, depending on the poll you read. And there is also a feeling that the US troops themselves are not going to get too fussed about allowing openly LGBT people to serve either. So the question now seems to be the timeline for repeal. Should the Congress wait until after the year-long review into the issue proposed by Mullen and Gates, and then repeal it starting next year in a gradual, piecemeal process? Or should Congress act now to get it repealed this year before midterm elections in November, which could see Republicans make significant gains in the Congress and stymie hopes for further reform? Well, just yesterday, Monday, Joe Lieberman announced that he will sponsor a bill to repeal the ban, to be introduced in the Senate most likely next week. Yes, this is the same Joe Lieberman who was the Democratic vice presidential candidate running with Al Gore in the 2000 election. And his support is seen by many as very positive because Lieberman has drifted away from the Democratic Party in recent years towards the right and is now labelled as an independent Democrat. He even supported John McCain in the 2008 presidential election. So his support for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell could convince other more right-wing senators to get on board and pass the legislation in the coming months, without waiting for the year-long study proposed by the Pentagon. Frankly, I hope that's what does happen, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. With the US's top generals due to testify in Congress later this week, this is not an issue that's going to disappear from the headlines anytime soon. By the way, dear listener, just in case you're interested, Australia has allowed openly LGBT people to serve in the armed forces since 1992, back when Paul Keating was Prime Minister, and apparently it caused very little disruption. Okay, that concludes our LGBT news roundup for today. Let's listen to a song now, and when we come back, we'll have a look at the morally reprehensible behaviour of Australia's largest homeopathic company, the Brower Corporation. So to find out what they've done, stay tuned here on Reality Check on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, award-winning radio.
All day, all night. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check. I'm Tony Pittman and the station is Joy 94.9. And the song you just heard there was Si Me Innamoro by Italian supergroup of the 70s and 80s, Ricchi e Poveri. Okay, we now move into the part of the show where we undertake a skeptical analysis of a subject related to pseudoscience or the paranormal. And tonight we're going to wrap up our series of 5 episodes examining the alternative medicine known as homeopathy. And the plan for tonight is to have a look at the morally reprehensible behaviour of Australia's largest manufacturer of homeopathic remedies, the Brower Corporation, and also to use some statements by Brower to learn about logical fallacies. Now, from our previous examinations of homeopathy, we've come to the conclusion that, based on fundamental physics, chemistry, and pharmacology, homeopathy really should not work. And clinical trials, in fact, show that it doesn't work. If you'd like to hear how we came to that conclusion, you can download episodes 24 to 26 of Reality Check on our website, realitycheckonline.net. So let's take a look now at the Brower Corporation. Its headquarters are located in Tanunda, just outside Adelaide in South Australia. And from there, they send out their homeopathic, quote-unquote, medicines to all corners of the continent. Brower dominates the homeopathy market in Australia, and their products are available in almost every pharmacy throughout the country, and many health food shops as well. In preparation for this episode, I visited 8 chemists here in the city centre of Melbourne, and all of them were selling Brower products. Now, what kind of useful products does Brower sell? Well as their detox and weight loss products, they also offer stress relief formulas, cough and cold remedies, allergy relief, insomnia cures, as well as pain relief and joint and muscle creams. Interesting, isn't it, that all these conditions that Brower products purportedly treat are all generally mild and non-life-threatening, and normally the type of things that disappear after a few days, even when left untreated. In fact, they're the classic kinds of conditions that can be treated pretty well by the placebo effect. Could that be a coincidence? Brower offers a range of products that contain virtually no active ingredient and offers them for a range of conditions known to be highly susceptible to treatment by the placebo effect. Very interesting. Now, just by way of background, I always assume that people know what the placebo effect is, but not everyone has heard of it, so just to explain briefly, the placebo effect is what happens when the symptoms of a disease or condition are reduced because the patient is given a treatment and believes that their condition will be improved by that treatment, irrespective of whether it has any genuine medical benefit. In other words, the fact that a patient believes that they are receiving an effective treatment for their condition can itself cause symptoms to reduce, even if the treatment is fake. And the placebo effect works particularly well for conditions with a significant psychological element, such as stress, pain, or insomnia. All conditions that Brower products purport to treat. What a surprise! Now, as we've already said, homeopathy can't work and doesn't work. So the only possible benefit anyone could get from taking a Brower homeopathic remedy would be due to the placebo effect. And this raises the interesting ethical question that we dealt with partially on last week's show in our discussion with John Bell. Is it ethical to make or sell as real medicine a product that is nothing more than a pure placebo? But tonight I want to get into a more complicated ethical question which arises due to the fact that Brower not only sells homeopathic remedies for adults, but also offers a range of products for babies and small children. Among those are remedies such as colic relief, teething relief, cold and flu relief, and pain and fever relief. And they even have a couple of really sweet TV commercials for their baby products. Why don't we have a listen to a couple of those now?
When Ella was just a few months old, she suffered badly with colic.
She wouldn't settle and was always grizzly.
Then a friend told me about Brower's colic relief. What a difference! Ella started to settle almost at once and was a lot happier. Because Brower's colic relief is a natural homeopathic medicine, I felt confident in giving it to my newborn. I will definitely recommend Brower's colic relief for someone with a new baby.
Look for your special Brower Baby Essentials introductory pack at your local pharmacy or health food store.
Okay, that was Brower's homeopathic colic relief. Now let's listen to the one for teething relief.
As a mum with a baby, you just get over the colic stage and then the teething begins, and that can be even worse. I didn't want to give Oliver anything that wasn't naturally based, but I could see he was in pain and I felt so sorry for him. But then a friend told me about Brower's teething relief. Brower's teething relief is made from natural ingredients, so it doesn't contain aspirin or paracetamol. So I was confident it would be a better option for Oliver.
Look for your special Brower Baby Essentials introductory pack at your local pharmacy or health food store.
Oh, so sweet, isn't it? So Brower is clearly marketing these products for young babies. And one issue of slight concern is that Brower's teething relief, pain and fever relief, and children's cold and flu relief all contain a range of diluted poisons and toxic heavy metals, as do most homeopathic remedies. But in the Brower remedies, many of these are not diluted beyond the limit where no molecule or atom of the original substance could possibly remain. For example, some of their baby products contain strychnine and mercury in a 6C dilution and arsenic in a 4C dilution. That means you will find trace amounts of strychnine, mercury, and arsenic in those remedies. Remedies sold specifically for babies. Now, that's a little bit disturbing in my opinion. But the trace amounts of toxic substances is not the real problem with Brower's baby products. The real problem with these products is that they don't do anything. most likely they don't even have a placebo effect. As we saw earlier, to get a placebo effect, the patient has to believe that the treatment is effective. Now, this won't happen with a baby. It's been postulated that you could possibly get a placebo effect in a baby through a process of conditioning, something like Pavlov's dogs. But even if that were true, it wouldn't happen the first few times you gave the remedy to the baby. So if your six-month-old baby is in pain and you give her Brouwer's pain and fever relief for babies, your baby's pain will not be relieved. The same goes for the teething formula, the colic formula, and all the other baby products. So a concerned parent will see their baby is in pain, will go down to the local pharmacy, will ask for a pain relief product that is safe for babies, and they'll be sold a Brouwer product and told it is natural and has no side effects. And this product won't be cheap. Some of these products go for about $19 a bottle. The parent will then return home and give the product to their child, thinking it will help them. And it won't do anything to relieve the baby's pain. The baby will continue suffering. Now, that situation is utterly unethical and morally reprehensible on the part of Brouwer and the pharmacists that sell its products. And yet this is happening every day throughout the country. And what's more, a lot of people are making money from it. So ultimately, what it all boils down to is this. The Brouwer Corporation and every pharmacy and shop that sells Brouwer's homeopathic baby remedies are profiting from the suffering of babies and small children. It's hard to think of a form of behaviour more morally base and abhorrent than this. Okay, now that's all a bit heavy, so let's lighten the tone now a little bit here on Reality Check, and let's have some fun with the Brouwer Corporation and learn some lessons along the way about logical fallacies. So, because I was planning to make this serious allegation about Brouwer's behaviour on tonight's show, I thought it only right to give Brouwer the chance to defend itself. So I called up Brouwer and spoke with one Robert Medhurst, the company's professional services manager. I told him what I was planning to say and asked him on what research Brouwer based its claims about the efficacy of its products. He said he'd respond if I put my questions in writing, which I did so. And he did in fact respond. And it's his response that I'd like to go through now because I think there's something in it from which we can all learn. Robert Medhurst begins his email like this. Hi Tony, thanks for the opportunity to raise the profile of homeopathy through your radio station. The only bad publicity is no publicity, of course, so thanks for your help with this. Hey, Robert, no problem at all. Happy to help out where I can. In fact, if you want publicity like this, I'll be happy to give it to you every week. For free, in fact. Now, Robert then continues for a while, saying that from our phone conversation, it's clear that I don't know anything about homeopathy, and then says, please note here that I'm not refusing to answer your questions, but so I'm sure I'm not wasting my time and therefore Brouwer's time before I respond to your questions, I'd like a detailed response from you to the material below and an answer to the question I've asked you at the end. Robert then pasted 10 pages of fascinating material about the wonders of homeopathy. So, hang on, Robert, let me just get this straight. All I did was give you the opportunity to allow Brouwer to defend itself, and now you're giving me 10 pages of material and a series of questions to respond to before you'll allow me to give you the opportunity to defend yourself? Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that sounds like it's really going to happen, don't you think? Well, actually, it is going to happen. Not because I want to jump through the hoops for your sake, Robert. I mean, why would I waste my time? But because the two questions that you asked me actually serve as useful examples of some of the classic logical fallacies in the reasoning of so many people involved in the alternative medicine industry. So let's go through those questions now and see what we can learn. So Robert's first question is the following. I'd appreciate it if you could tell me if your reality check program has featured any stories on medical iatrogenesis, which is responsible for at least 14,000 deaths in Australia every year and upwards of 750,000 human deaths in places like the USA. And if you have not, why you've ignored these areas? Now, dear listener, I'm wondering if your response to that question was the same as mine, which was something along the lines of, what? So, of course, the first thing I did was to turn to the intertubes and look up medical iatrogenesis. And the first thing I discovered was that Robert actually spelt it wrong. It's actually medical iatrogenesis. But that's okay, Robert. It's a very complicated word. And if you're going to use it to bamboozle people, you shouldn't be expected to know how to spell it as well. Anyway, dear listener, you'll be interested to know that Wikipedia says, and I quote, "The term iatrogenesis refers to inadvertent adverse effects or complications caused by or resulting from medical treatment or advice. Iatrogenesis is not restricted to conventional medicine and can also result from complementary and alternative medical treatments." End quote. So you get the idea. This covers things like when the surgeon leaves a rubber glove behind in your chest cavity after they've already sewn you up, or when a nurse gives you the wrong medication. It also covers instances of stroke caused by chiropractic neck manipulation or collapsed lungs from acupuncture needles going in too far. So that's what iatrogenesis is. Now, to answer your question, Robert, as to why I've never featured a story specifically on iatrogenesis on Reality Check, well, maybe you haven't listened to enough episodes of Reality Check yet, but here on Reality Check, we deal with issues related to pseudoscience and the paranormal. And iatrogenesis doesn't fall into either of these categories. It's real. It exists. Mistakes really do occur. No one is making any supernatural claims about it. So that's why we've never looked at it on Reality Check, Robert. You get it now? Okay, yes, I'm being disingenuous. I think I know what Robert's trying to say in his question. And the reason I'm pretty sure that I know what he's getting at is because this is something that comes up again and again when dealing with people who try to defend alternative medicines. Almost invariably, when you get into a discussion with a practitioner or adherent of some particular form of alternative medicine, they will very quickly try to steer the conversation away from talking about the efficacy or not of their particular form of alternative medicine and towards talking about the failings of science-based medicine. And this is the logical fallacy known as the red herring, an attempt to divert attention away from the matter at hand and change the subject. And the reason this is a logical fallacy is because whatever you say about the new subject is completely irrelevant. If we're talking about whether homeopathy works or not, and you start to talk about adverse effects that can arise from other medical treatments, well, that's completely irrelevant. It has nothing to do with whether homeopathy works or not. The fact that nurses sometimes give their patients the wrong drugs has absolutely nothing to do with whether clinical trials show that homeopathy has a greater effect than a placebo in relieving pain. So raising any other issue is a red herring, a classic and very common logical fallacy. So thank you, Robert, for providing us with a very useful lesson in the logical fallacy of the red herring there. Now, the other question that you asked me also raises a very interesting issue that I'd like to discuss on tonight's show. Let's get into that one now. And this is the question that Robert poses at the end of his long 10-page email. He says, and I quote, "So, Tony, my question to you is, if, as you infer, homeopathy is no better than placebo, how do you explain the levels of use around the world, and the fact that it has not only survived, but grown vigorously over the last 213 years? Well, Robert, that is a fascinating question, and one that skeptics ask themselves almost every day. How can something that obviously doesn't work be so popular? And of course, it doesn't just apply to homeopathy, but pretty much all the alternative medicines. And many of them have been around for much longer than homeopathy. Like acupuncture, for example, or traditional Chinese medicine, or Indian Ayurvedic medicine. They've probably been around thousands of years. And what about the medical practices in Europe based on the four humours, things like bloodletting and purging? They were popular for about 2,000 years and only really started to disappear about 150 years ago. So, Robert, it's a really interesting question. How can medical theories that have no validity last for so long and be so popular? And actually, let's take it in two parts. How did they manage to last for so long in the past? And why does their popularity persist today, when they're now competing with science-based medicine that has been proven to work? So, to answer the first question first, the reason those beliefs lasted for so long, thousands of years in some cases, is because the societies in which they were practiced didn't have methods to collect and analyze data about the effectiveness of the therapies they were using. It's that simple. No one in 15th century China or 18th century Germany ever thought to use randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials to determine whether a treatment was effective or not. So they literally could not know. They relied on dogma from people who had handed it down to them and anecdotes from people who used the therapy. That's it. They had no systematized way to really know if the therapy worked or not. They hadn't come up with a scientific method, and they certainly never applied it to medicine. That only began in the mid-19th century, when germ theory started to be conceived, and doctors started to test their hypotheses. And as to the question of why homeopathy and other alternative medicines are still around today, when science-based medicine has been so incredibly successful at eradicating and treating so many diseases, well, the reason is basically due to a lack of critical thinking on the part of people who promote it and people who use it. People get the benefit of the placebo effect, and people believe anecdotes, and they've never been taught to think critically about those things. Someone uses a homeopathic remedy for something mild and short-term, and they feel better afterwards. They then tell their friend who also uses it and also feels better afterwards. People believe the anecdotes they read in magazines and on the internet. They believe the anecdotes of their friends. And most of all, they believe their own experience. And one of the hardest lessons to learn as a skeptic is that you can't even believe your own experience. If you took a homeopathic remedy and felt better afterwards, You cannot conclude that the homeopathic remedy worked, even if you feel sure it did. It might just have been pure placebo effect. It might just have been a coincidence in timing. You would have got better then anyway, no matter what you'd taken. Your own experience is not conclusive. The only way to eliminate biases and know if a treatment is effective or not is through double-blind scientific clinical trials. The vast majority of people are unaware of this and go on believing anecdotes and judging the placebo effect to be a real effect. And that is what explains why homeopathy is still so popular today, even though it doesn't work. So, thank you for your questions, Robert. They were very thought-provoking and provided fertile ground for an interesting discussion on this evening's show. And with that, I think we'll end our record-breaking 5-episode marathon on homeopathy. Next week, I promise no more homeopathy. We'll do something completely different. Okay, finally, before we get into our last song, if you have any questions or comments about what we've covered on the show, or maybe a topic you'd like us to cover on the show, please feel free to send us an email. The address is realitychecktony@gmail.com. You can also visit our webpage too, if you like. That's realitycheckonline.net. Okay, let's listen to our last song for today, and when we come back, we'll get into this week's movie review.
Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9. Award-winning radio.
Hello, this is Katie Lang on Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Reality Check with me, Tony Pittman, on Joy 94.9. Also streaming live at joy.org.au and also available as a podcast to listen to anywhere in the world on your little pod. And the song you just heard there was Return of the Mac by Mark Morrison from 1996. Now, we've had a couple of SMSs in to the studio. One is from Jamie, who says, in all fairness, I must say that homeopathy does work for me, and my local GP uses it too. In fact, he introduced it to me. Well, Jamie, all I can say is, if you're interested in learning more about homeopathy, do go to the website realitycheckonline.net and download episodes 24 to 26, where I go in a lot of detail into homeopathy and why I believe, and pretty much every scientist out there believes, that homeopathy can't work and doesn't work. And Jamie, I would just say that, well, if it relieves pain or whatever, that's good. But if you do get a serious illness, please don't rely on homeopathy to treat that. And we also got a message from Nick listening, streaming live in Tipton in England. So special greetings out to you, Nick. Now, it's movie review time here on Reality Check. And the movie up for review this week is A Single Man. But before we get into that review, I just wanted to mention a quick piece of movie news that happened over the weekend. And that was the presentation of the Teddy Award at the Berlin Film Festival. That's an annual award given to films covering LGBT topics. And this year's Best Film Award went to The Kids Are All Right, an American movie starring Julianne Moore and Annette Bening, who play a same-sex couple whose children decide to seek out their biological father. So, a film to look out for in the coming months, definitely. Now, let's turn to tonight's movie, A Single Man. And it's also a film that won an LGBT-related award. Not the Teddy Award, but the Queer Lion Award at the Venice Film Festival back in September. A fact that we mentioned here on Reality Check when it happened. Well, A Single Man is finally opening in Australia this Thursday and has been attracting quite a lot of acclaim, particularly for the performance of its lead actor, Colin Firth, who on Sunday night, just 2 days ago, won the award for Best Actor at the BAFTAs, that is, the British equivalent of the Oscars. And he is, in fact, in the running for the Best Actor Award at the Hollywood Oscars as well, in a couple of weeks' time. And I have to say, he certainly does give a very powerful performance in A Single Man. In fact, I would say that he's the best thing about this movie. In the film, Colin Firth plays George Falconer, a middle-aged English professor teaching at a university in Los Angeles in 1962. George is grieving the loss of his longtime partner, Jim, who died in a car accident 8 months earlier, and the film follows George's movements throughout one entire day. A momentous day in his life, because it's the day on which he has decided to end his life. Now, that's a bit of a spoiler telling you that, because it's not really obvious until about two-thirds of the way through the film. But actually, I wish I'd known that fact from the start, because it means that all those scenes in the first part of the movie where he just looks pensively at the world take on a whole new meaning if you understand that he's looking at the world for the last time. I didn't realize this when I saw the film, so I was left wondering what all those long contemplative stares were all about. Apart from Colin Firth's standout performance, the other notable thing about A Single Man is that it's the first feature film directed by Tom Ford, the famous American fashion designer. And I have to say, you can tell that this film was made by a fashion designer. The attention to detail in the clothes, the hairstyles, and the production design is immaculate. They've conjured up an idealized version of 1962, where all the women have beehives and everyone is impeccably dressed. So they're the two best things about the movie, the look of the film and Colin Firth. The other elements of the film, particularly the plot and the dialogue, in my opinion, leave a little bit to be desired. Ultimately, I found the whole project a little bit vacuous. Everything looks very sleek, and the film gives the impression that it's dealing with really deep issues, but actually it's all pretty superficial, I thought. Maybe somewhat similar to the whole fashion industry from which Tom Ford comes. Fashion designers often talk as if they're doing something really important and profound, but in reality it's actually very superficial and transient. Now, I don't want to be accused of stereotyping here, but it's no surprise to me that this movie is the way it is. Tom Ford is a wealthy, white, gay, American fashion designer. And A Single Man is pretty much exactly the type of film that you'd expect a wealthy, white, gay, American fashion designer to make. The men are all beautiful, everyone is rich and white. Well, except for the male prostitute, who's an exotic Latino from Spain, played not coincidentally by a male supermodel, John Cortajarena. The dialogue and themes of the movie seem very profound, but actually they're really quite run-of-the-mill. This film could never be described as gritty or challenging in any way. And maybe most grating of all are the flashbacks to intimate moments between George and Jim. Rather than being moving glimpses into the life they once shared together, I found them to be totally contrived, cliched visions of an idealized, happy, rich, white, gay couple. Everything is so perfect. I mean, really, Tom, is that the most imaginative thing you could come up with? And the other thing that bugged me was the fact that there are quite a few scenes of male nudity. Men with gorgeous bodies, of course, but the men are always turned away from the camera or with their leg slightly raised so that we only ever get to see buttocks and never even one glimpse of a penis. Why not? Will everyone faint in the cinema or something? I have to admit that the irrational fear of seeing human genitals has always frustrated and confounded me. And so this middle-class prudishness, masquerading as tasteful beauty, really got on my nerves. So overall, I would say, see a single man for Colin Firth's charisma. See it for the gorgeous 1960s decor. But don't go expecting to be shaken out of your comfort zone or to learn something profound about the universe. It is ultimately very safe, middle-of-the-road fare, glammed up to look more sophisticated than it really is. Now, just before we conclude today's show, I'd like to remind you that starting next week, Reality Check will be moving into the new time slot of 8 o'clock Monday nights. So I hope you can join us there. And before we wrap up, I would like to say a very big thank you to Andrew, who's been providing support on the desk here every Tuesday night over the last 3 months. Well, the whole summer, basically. So thanks, man. Much appreciated. And that brings us to the end of the 29th episode of Reality Check here on Joy 94.9. I hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to send any questions, comments, or feedback to realitychecktony@gmail.com. And visit our website at realitycheckonline.net. And remember to tune in at 8 o'clock next Monday for episode 30. Coming up now are Petro and Jono with Sound Museum. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.